Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. It's the 16th of November 2024. It's 10 to 7 in the morning. It's a dark morning. I've made myself a cup of coffee. Let's have a slurp. And the cat has been out all night. I'll tell you why in a minute. I'm just going to see if the cat... Where are you? Are you in the shed? It can always go in the shed. But let's go out. Chemtrails are up in the sky. Looking down. Oh, there you are, slinking back. There's almost a frost. Blue sky potential today. But, oh my God, the chemtrails are out there. In force. Striping it. My goodness. That is quite vivid. Right, come on in. Come on. You've been at... Come on. Thank you. Oh, you've been with your black friend. I don't know whose cat you are, that's the thing. You're quite fat. So you've been overly spoilt. He's got... There's a black fluffy cat. They've obviously been together. That's interesting. So you've got a friend, your poor old black, well, at least your black one's very fluffy. Hello. He's purring away. You've got some food down there, so that's what you can have. You're not having any treats because you've been out all night, mate. I called you loads of times. I walked up and down the alley and you weren't coming. I got up at 3 o'clock to have a look. If you were desperate to come in, no sign of you. So, I'm afraid to say, matey, you have had to stay out. Now, I am looking for a book that came yesterday. And I don't know what I've done with them. I put them down somewhere. I had a chap come over yesterday, a policeman chap. Actually, he works with policemen, but he's wide awake, which was great to see. What have I done with the books? Or did I put them down here? I think I did. I'm also looking for my diary. There's my diarists. And here is the book that I want to share with you today. There we go. Let me turn off this big light. We don't need that on. There we go. Bit sniffly this morning because of the chemtrails and what have you. Oh, I charged up my radio mics yesterday and I don't need them on now. They are fully charged. Ah, there we go. Sit down. Yes, and very nice chap, this chap who came over yesterday. We had a long chat. He came over about 6 o'clock and went, he went about 10 o'clock. Had a long chat. As you know, I'm writing a book. There's some bits with police bits in it, so I was asking him about that, and he said, "Oh, any of those sort of things, just let me know, and I can tell you whether it's accurate or give you the right sort of section and this, that, and the other. No problem at all." And I thought, "Oh, that's fantastic." We talked about all sorts of things to do with, well, not just policing, but the COVID times, and it's always a good conversation, isn't it? What did you do during COVID? And as a policeman, it was fascinating. And also, in recent times, anyway, I don't want to say too much about what he does because that's his own business and it's not for me to share because some of it's quite specific. Anyway, he smokes a cigar and he brought me a cigar. And it's a big fat cigar, which is very nice. I haven't smoked it yet. I was smoking my pipe, but he's got me one, which I might smoke tomorrow night or something. So that's very nice. Very, very kind. Anyway, it was lovely, and he stayed, and we... If I'd known he was going to stay that long, I would have cooked a meal. But had I, you know, even twigged, because I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't sure if he was going to get on with me and I would get on with him. And I mean, I get on with most people. That's not the issue. Anyway, and we enjoyed a pipe. I enjoyed a pipe and we had a chat. So that was grand. Right, okay. I just got itchy arm. Let me just scratch the itchy arm. It could open the curtains, I suppose. Let whatever light there is in to the into the house. I'm sitting here in the dark. Because in the end, he left about 10. I had a chat with Julia. I hadn't eaten. I had cooked some food, which was a bit late. Let me just do that. Open the curtain. See what's going on. Oh, God, the chemtrails. They are so vivid this morning. So stark, you know. Etched against the sky, these absolute bastards. Right. It must cost them a fortune. Well, they can print whatever money they like in the end, can't they? So, we only have one line of text yesterday. On the 16th, we've got two, both from Gilbert White on our diarist. And it says here, let's get the light directed to the book a bit better. It says, on November the 16th, paths greasy from frost, raked and swept up the leaves in my outlet, the hanger naked. Now, I've been over to haven't been up the hanger, been over to Gilbert White's house. This was Gilbert White, 1790. We've been there. It's a red sky at night, shepherd's delight, red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning. So what does that tell you about today on a Saturday? And then, anyway, 1783, and this is interesting. I say it's interesting. The writer, what's his name? Geoffrey Grigson, is pretty good in compiling his English year. And with each character that he has searched, he tends to put the dates in order. So if there's two Gilbert White entries, one will be earlier and one will be a few years later, whatever, you know. Every now and again he does cock up, because I've noticed this. This is the second entry of Gilbert White. The first one was 1790, but this is 1783, 7 years earlier. And it's just one word, three words. Winter is established. So there you are. So we're now, according to Gilbert White, we're in winter. I don't know when the official winter term starts. But that does seem to be a bit right. Anyway, I wanted to introduce you to this other book that came, a delightful book. I ordered this myself using my own hands. This is called Fertility Farming by somebody called Frank Newman Turner. This is a version, an English book, that has been printed in America because it's a particularly important book. And it's mentioned, it's referenced in the book that I've got called Grass Nation by Graham Harvey, and I'm almost through that. And he mentions this pioneering chap in the 1950s. There were many other pioneering people, but this chap was embracing what was done before. Now, I have to say, although it's a nice book, the print is a strange font, and it's very close to each other, which is playing havoc with my eyes. But there's some lovely pictures. So this is you know, this is what we want to be doing, the farming business, and this is a great way back to proper farming. So let me read you a little passage. Getting Goose Green Back to Life is chapter one. We may as well start at chapter one. Now, Goose Green, I believe, is in Somerset. And he talks, the book is about how he discovers that the old-fashioned methods are better, and that at the time in the 50s, I think this was printed in 57, he goes against the grain. He goes against what everybody else is doing, is embracing technology, taking subsidies and all of this, and going into pesticides and, you know, the embryonic version of all of that. I'm going to sneeze. Achoo! Excuse me. And this is, I suppose, the beginning of the term organic. And yet, of course, organic was how everybody did it. That was farming. But as the chemical farming became the norm, when you did something different, it had to have a label, and this is what happened. Anyway, let's have a quick look. When I came to Goose Green Farm, the first calf born was dead. Disease was already master of the farm. Was I to be man enough to face such a master and turn his efforts into my advantage? I thought I was, but disease drained the resources of the farm for nearly 5 years, running nearly 2 herds of cattle in the process, ruining nearly 2 herds of cattle in the process, before I reached a position of stability in the health and the production of the farm. In February 1941, with an agricultural training at university and the experience gained from working in agriculture all my life, I took on the management of the farm. Subsequently, I rented it, and then I bought it. My training had been orthodox, and although my ideas had been modified by contract with and experience of the value of nature methods of farming and livestock management, policy was controlled by the owners of the farm, so the methods of the man who had farmed the place for 25 years previous to 1941 were more or less continued. The cattle had lived and produced milk on the same pasture for generations. The hay that the mowing pastures produced could better have served the purpose of wire for all its nutritional value. Arable crops were heavy enough, as crops grown with ample artificial manures at first are, but a variety of crop diseases were evident and showing signs of increase. The cattle were good milkers, as commercial herds go, as well they should have been, for their main article of diet was purchased, imported, concentrated, high-protein feeding stuffs, upon which the cows were forced to the limit of their capacity to produce milk and calves. The more milk the calves gave, the less natural, bulky food they were allowed to eat, and what homegrown food they had was raised with artificial manures. Sorry, my reading might be a bit rubbish. My eyes are dancing about. There's something with one eye, I don't know quite what it is, but there's something about this text that is unusual. It is leaping about on the page. It's almost flashing. It's hard to explain it. And I do not get that with other fonts. But there's something about the tightness of the font, the closeness of the font, and the size of the font that is doing that to me. At least it did it yesterday when I opened the book to read it, when it arrived, and it's doing it this morning. And I thought at first it was just I had tired eyes, but it's just something odd about it that's doing it for me. It might not do it for other people. Anyway. Governed by the instructions of the committee representing the owners, I farmed the orthodox lines. We purchased all the artificials that could be got, and by placing orders with several firms got rather more than our share, much to my subsequent regret. We tried to be good farmers according to the orthodox standards, and our reward was a trading loss of £2,000 for 2 years during the piping days of war, abortion in 75% of cows, 50% of our total stock reactors to the tuberculosin test, and a large acreage of corn ruined with smut and take-all diseases, with chocolate spot making bean growing impossible. When at the beginning of 1943 I had the opportunity to take the farm over on my own, I knew that half the cattle were barren and that I had a long history of disease to tackle. But I had faith in nature. The fact that not all the cattle had succumbed to a contagious abortion and tuberculosis led me to believe that disease is not primarily caused by bacteria, but that it was the result of deficient or excess of wrong feeding and wrong management, with bacteria only as a secondary factor. Nature provides the means of combating all the diseases that any living thing is likely to encounter, and I've discovered that bacteria are the main means of combating disease, not the cause of it, as we have formerly believed. So I decided to get my farm and its livestock back to nature. I would manure the fields as nature intended. I would stop exhausting fertility of my fields and give them the recuperative benefit of variety. My cows would no longer have to act as machines with compound cakes going in at one end and milk and calves coming out at the other. I would return them as nearly as possible to their natural lives. The more natural parts of the diet, lays, green fodder, other bulky foods and herbs, would be assured and adequate quantities insisted upon before any concentrates were fed. All the food the cows and other livestock would receive would be homegrown, on land filled with farmyard manure, compost and green crop manure. Artificial fertilisers, which had left my soil solid and impossible to live in for almost any form of soil life, were dispensed with entirely, not only because I was at last convinced of the disaster they had brought upon me, but because I could no longer afford to buy them. There was not enough ordinary muck to go round with the rapid ploughing up programme that the poor grass made necessary, and the consequence increase of the arable acreage, straw was accumulating. Instead of tying up the cows in the winter, they were given the freedom and turned loose in the yards, being milked in the milking parlour. Quickly, the straw stacks diminished, not in smoke, so often as happened on so-called progressive farms these days, but by way of the cattle yards. They grew into tons and tons of composts, which went back to produce whole wheat, to grind into flour for bread, whole oats and beans to be ground for cattle food, and fresh green stuff for all living things on the farm, soil, cattle and men. This is absolutely fascinating. I'm struggling because I tell you, I've worked out what it is. The words, the individual word, the space between the words is so small that the words are very difficult to separate. It's very odd. It's very minor, but it's the way they've crammed them on the page. Anyway, are you enjoying this? I'm finding this absolutely thrilling. This kind of farming restored life to a dying farm. Everything on the farm, from the soil teeming with life and fertility, to the cows all pregnant or in full milk, and to the farmer and his family full of energy and good health, acclaim the righteousness of this policy. My neighbours have, of course, questioned the financial wisdom of such system of farming. They said that labour for composting would be higher than the cost of buying and separating artificial fertilisers, and yields could not possibly compare. Cost certainly did appear to increase, for it seemed that we spent more time about the muck heap and spreading the compost than we ever did about handling artificial manures. But when it came to be worked out, the extra cost was nothing, for the men were engaged on the muck during the wet weather and at times when there was no other productive work for them to do. Previously, we must have wasted a good deal of time on worthless jobs, when now all our spare time was building up fertility at no extra cost. I shall show in this book how it's possible for the average medium-sized farm to be self-supporting in fertility and consequently free of disease, with less capital outlay, a reduction in labour costs and an immense saving in the costs of manures and veterinary and medicine bills. But though there was a reaction in costs, there was a marked increase in yields. My threshing contractor tells me that my yields are not equaled in the district. Yet all the neighbours boast that they all used artificial all the artificial fertilisers they could use, that they could lay their hands on. But it is not an increase in yields or the costs that I measure the success of this organic fertilising, this fertility farming, though these things are important in times of economic stress. It is the health of all living things on the farm that proclaims nature's answer to our problems. From a herd riddled with abortion and tuberculosis, in which 8 years ago few calves were born to full term, and those few that reached the due date were dead. I can now walk around the sheds full of healthy calves, and cows formerly sterile, now heavy in calf or milk. I've advertised in the farming press for sterile cows and cows suffering from mastitis, and have been brought many pedigree animals, declared useless by vets, given them a naturally grown diet and a period of fasting, herbal and dietary treatment, which I have discovered to be effective in restoring natural functions, and they have subsequently borne calves and come to full profitable production, or had their udders restored to perfect health. Cows, coming to the end of this chapter, which I shall pause on. Cows have been sterile for 2 or 3 years, have given birth to healthy calves. On the orthodox farm, there is no hope for these cases, and animals are slaughtered as barreners. By nature, but nature intended the cow to continue breeding into old age, and if treated as nature intended, there is every chance that her breeding capacity can be restored. I consider my pedigree Jersey cattle worth keeping and bringing back to production, and if I could buy similar animals with which others had failed, it was also doing good to myself as well as the condemned cows. And it has paid me both financially and in moral satisfaction. I have cows aged 14 to 20 years, which, after being sterile for years, have given birth to strong calves and milked well afterwards. In the process of all this work, I've experimented with the use of herbs in the treatment of animal disease and discovered ways in which this science can be used to the farmer in a fix with disease. I shall say something about the treatment in a part of this book. But I should stress at the outset, the main purpose of this book is to demonstrate the simplicity and effectiveness of farming by the laws of nature, and above all, to show that it can be done on the poorest of farms by the poorest of men. Such restoration of a dead farm is an achievement worth any man's efforts, and success within the reach of any farmer who will turn back to fertility farming and eschew that get-rich-quick methods of commercialised science, which, and yes, eschew, I never quite know how you pronounce that word, eschew, is that how you pronounce it, E-S-C-H-E-W, and eschew the get-quick, in other words, reject the get-quick method of commercialised science, which are, in fact, a snare. And he's so right. That's a beautiful word. It is a snare. It's a trap. Frank Newman Turner. What a lovely and incredibly terrific man. There's some lovely pictures as well. And, of course, it's farming in the 50s with very basic stuff. That's... we need a farm. You know, I don't just need a bit of land. I need a farm. I need a farm. I need a farmer who will let us come and manage his farm. It's what we need. And to stay on the farm and help. And go back. We need an adventurous farmer. That's what we need. Dairy farmer would be good, but other animals. Pigs, chickens, the whole lot. Getting back to mixed farming. That's what we want. And maybe that's what... that'll be my video. Not today necessarily, I've got another video lined up for today, but I think that's what Julia and I need. We need a cottage on a farm and a farm and a farmer who's open to it, who needs help. that is what we, that's where our skill is going to be, I think, and time also to make videos about it and to share that knowledge. I think that's going to be it. I find that absolutely fascinating. So anyway, there you go. That's the that's the book that came, and it's what a glorious man to have covered that. All right, Puss, did you eat your thing? It's going to turn my internet on. Going to have a quick... Oh, it is on. I thought I turned it off last night. That's very strange. I'm going to have a quick bath, a little tiny bath, because I am only dressed in partial clothes today, as it's a bit chilly. Oh, good. The cat has had all those things. He's sitting on the stairs. The cat likes to sit on the stairs. I think it's the wooden nature of the stairs that warms up under his bottom. Anyway, I should go and get this uploaded first of all. I should get myself shaven and dressed, bathed, shaven and dressed, that sort of thing. And then I have a video to make. So thank you very much for listening. It's Fertility Farming, Newman Turner. Very interesting book if you're into farming and you want to go back into organic proper. It's lovely to sit, read this stuff. Anyway, enough of my desires. You probably don't have any desires to do all that kind of stuff. I'm sure you'll have many other interesting things in life to look at. But thank you so much. If you did listen, you have gained some knowledge, as indeed I have. Until the next one, bye for now.